Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Better Call Paul is a production of Lola Media. Say hi, Lola.
Hey, everyone. This is Paul Sarker from Better Call Paul. Just wanted to remind you that the show is intended for entertainment purposes only and is not legal advice. I am not your lawyer unless we separately agree for me to represent you, and the views expressed by Mesh and me are solely our own. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Better Call Paul, where we get into the legal and business side behind the scenes of Hollywood. I'm your co-host, Paul Sarker, former Marvel lawyer, current big law media attorney.
And I'm your co-host, Mesh Lakhani, pop culture enthusiast, and that's kind of it. That's all I am. So, Paul, we've got a good one this week. This week, we are talking about Doctor Strange and the possibilities with all the new characters that we might see in this and how that works with IP. We're going to get into that and can't wait to dive in because this is going to be a really interesting one. But let's kick it off with some quick updates. Where do you want to start? Johnny Depp?
Yeah. Well, you know, first of all, I got to say shout out to Medusa. I saw them last night out in Brooklyn, and it's my first show in a while, and it was so great. Just, they're awesome. So hopefully, you know, they keep playing more shows. But yes.
Medusa's a DJ?
It's a trio of DJ/producers from Italy. And I mean, they're just like dominating the house music scene past couple years, I guess since 2019. And I was supposed to actually see them in LA on New Year's Eve, but one of them got COVID, so they had to postpone the show, and then we ended up not going.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah, but they're great. They're awesome.
Yeah, one of these days I'm going to have to join you for this Brooklyn Mirage thing. I don't know if I could handle it for an extended period of time. I think the last DJ I saw was one of the European ones from like when it was cool in the early aughts or like late aughts. Ugh, I'm blanking on the name. Well, I forgot.
We'll have to There's a lot of good shows coming up this month, next month. We'll do it for sure.
All right. Awesome. Well, let's kick it off with little Johnny Depp update. Look, the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial has become this incredible like piece of content and streaming for the whole world to see. I mean, this is all over the news constantly. They're live streaming it on news stations, TikTok, Instagram, memes, everything. Like this to me is Johnny Depp's big comeback.
It's crazy, right? I mean, when she wrote that op-ed in 2018, she probably wasn't anticipating a defamation lawsuit, Amber Heard that is. But, you know, last week I said that neither one of them was a winner, right, in this case, no, because the dirty laundry is being aired. But I guess I may have spoken too soon because Johnny Depp seems like he's reminding everyone why they loved him as an actor in the first place, right? He's charming.
Yeah.
He thinks quickly on his feet. He's emotive. He can convey so many different emotions and feelings just with his face and his mannerisms that he's captured our hearts and minds again.
It's really interesting to see that. I mean, obviously he said that, you know, even if he wins this case, like he's lost everything. But as fans, I think we can see, like, to your point, I mean, the guy is so witty. His comebacks are so funny to Amber Heard's lawyers, who honestly, I would say the biggest losers are, like, I feel bad for them because there's so much fun being poked at them and trolling being done on them on TikTok to the point where, like, it's Depp's snarky responses to them or he's making fun of the questions he asked. At one point, Amber Heard's lawyer asked Depp a question and then objected to his own question. And then the judge said, but you asked the question. And it's almost like I don't know what's going on here.
You don't object to yourself. That's not.
It honestly reminds me, I don't know if you remember the movie Sleepers back in the day, Jason Patrick, Brad Pitt, Robert De Niro. But in the movie, they essentially, to win this trial, they figure out a way to hire a really, really terrible lawyer to represent the other side so that that person would like on purpose lose.
Oh, wow.
Or it would be so bad. Look, the movie is super depressing. Excellent movie. I haven't seen it, but it reminds me of that. Look, this is Depp is winning the crowd back. And I think that if I was a studio right now, I'd be thinking about, given that obviously like some other franchises that he's left, there's an opportunity for someone to come in and be like, hey, we want to build an entire new career around, you know, this whole thing, that the world loves Johnny Depp again.
That would be really cool. I mean, it'd be certainly a pivot, right? Like, from, you know, to use this case and the public trial to sort of resurrect his career. But it would be an interesting thing to see. I did read that she said after her divorce settlement, where she got the $7 million payment, that she would donate that all to charity. I did read that the ACLU said that they hadn't received the full amount. I think they said they only got $500,000 from her. But, you know, whatever. It's a shame.
Yeah, it's a shame. And so we'll see how this plays out. I mean, it might be one of those things where it's a weekly update until this thing is over, if there's anything entertaining that happens in it.
Well, I just wanted, because we were talking about defamation last week, in another instance of this, Jerry West sent a threatening letter to HBO Max saying that he was defamed in their dramatization series, Winning Time, about the Lakers dynasty. And HBO responded this week, as we thought they might, saying that they did copious amounts of research, extensive research, interviewed a lot of people, and that they feel that their portrayal is based in fact. And so they don't think he has a case. We'll see. I guess, Jerry, this may be a case where Jerry West thinks he's a great guy,
but maybe
other people didn't. But it's really, hopefully, he said he would actually take it to the Supreme Court. I don't know.
I mean, it seems like HBO is prepared for that one.
They do a lot of research. I mean, they're not some fly-by-night studio that's kind of just like going to take risk in this regard. I mean, that's to say that...
Exactly.
I don't know who has a claim or if they have a claim or don't have a claim, but I just know how careful they were with Succession and tend to be. You would think that they wouldn't do this lightly.
Yeah. I mean, I've got to imagine that any studio, especially Max, which has just been killing it. Recently on Twitter, someone asked a question, which is your favorite streaming service when it comes to content? And they gave like a few options. And the majority of people had HBO Max as their number one. The thread went viral. And I think it goes to show that they make not only great shows, but if they're going to make a great show, they're going to put a ton of work into it and make sure that they've covered all bases. You know, I guess this proves that to be the case, depending on, let's see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But at least they've said, you know, hey, we're not going to be intimidated. And they could have issued a retraction, but they didn't. They just said, yeah, we did our research. So,
all right, man. Well, let's take a quick break and let's get back with our main topic.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, Paul, this is a big week coming up. We've got one of the biggest MCU movies to come out, Doctor Strange and the Multitude of Madness. Everyone's been waiting for this movie. It sets up a lot of potential IP crossovers, new characters that are going to be introduced. I mean, this is going to be an important movie for the MCU, but obviously, like, before we get into why it's such a big deal, let's talk about the news that are coming around Doctor Strange 2 right now, which is pre-sale beat everyone already for this year, which is obviously we're still early in this year, but it beat the Batman. It beat some of the other movies. Like, pre-sales have been doing really, really well. I've already bought 4 tickets for this. 2 tickets for 2 different shows, depending on where I want to watch it in New York. I got one in Brooklyn. I got one in Union Square. My buddy and I are going to figure out which one might be the better crowd. But I couldn't buy tickets for Saturday's show for the IMAX and any of the big IMAXs. They were all sold out. So clearly a lot of people are anticipating this movie. Even international releases, it's getting a lot of buzz. I mean, Saudi Arabia is banning this movie because of LGBTQ representation. Yeah. So a lot of news. But let's go back and understand why Doctor Strange 2 is so important from the standpoint of having multiple crossovers, and what did Disney do to achieve this?
I think the headline is that this is the first Marvel sort of Kevin Feige and his creative trust produced movie they're able to integrate X-Men characters sort of freely. And I think that there's a whole backstory there, which we'll get into. But I think that's the significance of it from a fan perspective. And I know this is a legal podcast, but first and foremost, you know, we're both fans of Marvel and of the genre. And so I think this is particularly interesting to me, because, you know, growing up a Marvel fan, it was that X-Men cartoon show in the mid-90s that really got the me best. Hooked. You know, I was growing, I was probably like 8 or 9 years old when it came out. And then, you know, you watch it as you get older. And then that led to movies in the 2000s. And personally, you know, I applied to Marvel as an intern when I was in law school, just because right after Iron Man 2 came out, and they just happened to have an opening and they liked me, I liked them, and I started working there, and I ended up working there for 6 years. And I had turned down other offers to work at law firms, and I went to Marvel, and then Marvel got bought by Disney. So a big part of my career was just being a fan of the content.
Yeah.
And so the thing about Marvel, you know, everyone in recent memory, it's just been so dominant, right, as a studio, but it wasn't always that way. And in the late 90s, Marvel was actually bankrupt. So they were pressed for cash. I mean, Marvel was always a successful comic company, but it was run by a sort of corporate raider who really leveraged the company in the 90s and got into a lot of businesses that weren't cash flowing and took on a ton of debt. So it went into bankruptcy, and it was sort of the winning bid in bankruptcy was from a guy who had an action figure company, Toy Biz, and he was the current probably controlling person of Marvel, Isaac Perlmutter. I mean, he sold it to Disney, but he bought the company and ran it for 10 years, stripped it down to its like most profitable, barest essence as a licensing company that made comics. And after 10 years, he sold it to Disney for like a 25x return, right, or something crazy. It's like, right, one of the best business cases. I'm sure they talk about it at business school, or Harvard Business School, because his turnaround was just incredible. But one of the things they did in the late 90s was they licensed out the film rights to their most popular characters, because they weren't a movie company, right? And movies, right, historically, you know, like restaurants, they're just not great investments. It's hard to know which one's going to succeed, and it's kind of like a passion play. So movies, they're doing amazingly well with movies now, but at the time in the 90s and the 2000s, movies were speculative and they weren't a movie studio. So they licensed out families of characters like X-Men, Spider-Man, Fantastic. I mean, the list really goes on and on. Just to name a few, they had...
Yeah, name them out.
Like Punisher, Blade, Fantastic Four, Iron Man at one point, Ghost Rider, Daredevil, Elektra, Captain America, Black Panther, Luke Cage, Men in Black. They even actually had Transformers.
I didn't know Men in Black was Marvel.
Yeah, Men in Black was Marvel.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, and Transformers.
Transformers too?
Transformers was a Marvel comic in the 80s, and they licensed the film rights to Hasbro as part of the deal to make action figures.
Oh my God, I thought it was the opposite. I thought Hasbro made an action figure and then they decided to make this cartoon out of it.
I think it's disputed, but it actually, the first appearance of the Transformers, I think it was actually a Japanese cartoon, but...
No way.
Yeah, it was a Marvel comic in the 80s.
That's actually pretty sick.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if Marvel had MCU? All of its IP. Yeah, Transformers in the MCU, oh my God.
If Marvel was able to do that, because, I mean, come on, man. I mean, love Michael Bay, but after that first one, I was like, where is this series going? And then it just got worse and worse. Although Bumblebee was decent, but I did not know that Transformers was Marvel. That's pretty cool.
I mean, just imagine, right? Like, the amount of value that they have now, right, if they kept all their IP and were making movies. So this is kind of an emblematic of that. So let's just bring it back to the X-Men.
Yeah.
So the X-Men was licensed to Fox basically in perpetuity, as long as they made movies every couple of years. And in hindsight, you know, that's why people have lawyers. It's not that Marvel didn't have lawyers, but like, there's some things in that license that you wouldn't agree to now, that there's no way Marvel would agree to now. And so basically Marvel wasn't allowed to use any of the X-Men family of characters in film. Those were exclusive to Fox, but Marvel retained things like merchandise and comic rights. Mm. So it's not like the X-Men characters were no longer in the Marvel lexicon or world. It's just that they didn't control the film rights. And if you don't control the film rights, the most profitable, biggest dollar segment, and you want to be able to tell a cohesive story in your comics and in your films, right?
But let me ask you a question. If Fox releases an X-Men movie and then there's X-Men merchandise, does that mean Marvel gets some type of royalty from that?
It's actually the other way around. Marvel would control the merchandise rights.
I see.
And Fox would get some sort of percentage.
Interesting. Okay, cool.
Yeah. But if Marvel introduces a new X-Men in the comics, then he's automatically, whoever that character is automatically included in Fox's rights on the films. Right? That character, wow, within the family. And that's the thing. I mean, it's tricky because it was done in terms of families. And as we'll get into, some people wonder, well, why are Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver in Avengers 2? Because aren't they Magneto's kids? And they but they're also Avengers. So, you know, Marvel took the position that, hey, these are Avengers. They're not in the X-Men family. And then obviously X-Men's like, well, no, they're Magneto's kids. How could they, Fox, how could they not be X-Men? So they were kind split.
I can't imagine when making these agreements, are lawyers sitting there being like, okay, so these are the, like, are they asking the creators and like, these are kids, these are, you know, these are families, and this is part of the agreement. Like, it just sounds so crazy to me that they're like, well, no, they're like, now lawyers are arguing amongst each other, like, who are family members and who are not? Like, did that have to be really, really fine-tuned, like, tracked in the agreement?
So, like, a big part of my job when I was there, not to get into the sort of secret sauce, was to answer questions about, like, which characters could be used and which characters were, like, off-limits and were otherwise restricted. But, you know, these agreements were not sophisticated the way they are now, right? Like, you know, we're always evolving, adapting. So, like, you know, I look at the agreements I negotiate now are like 60, 70 pages. If it's a distribution agreement or a license, they're very complicated and they go into all just sorts of different grants of rights, emerging technologies, television, OTT, authenticated access, mobile access, all these different things, advertising. And the agreements 20, 30 years ago were like, 6 to 7 pages long. It was like, hey, you got these characters or this family and you have worldwide exclusive film rights. And that's like the end of it. Right. And
yeah.
And it goes into like audit and when the release payments were made and bonuses and stuff like that. So it's not like it wasn't a full deal. It's a deal, but they were just high level and they weren't dealing with things like digital rights or even the way we define profits and things like that has just gotten so much more complicated over time. So you're judging agreements that were done 30 years ago or more. Yeah. And like, yeah, they look kind of outdated now, but at the time, I don't know if they were state of the art, but that was just, you know, the deals that got done. And now the dollars are too big for someone to renegotiate it.
Right. Right.
So what ended up happening, which is what we'll get into, is that in order to sort of rectify this, Bob Iger had to buy Fox. And so in 2019, Disney was part of there was an auction. So Rupert Murdoch had Fox, 20th Century Fox. He decided to sell a lot of that. He kept certain things like Fox News and his broadcast stations and a couple other networks. But he sold the majority of 20th Century Fox. And there was actually two leading bidders, Comcast and Disney. And Disney ultimately had the winning bid. I think it was like $70 billion. And they ended up having to divest some assets for antitrust reasons. So they may have ended up paying like $50 billion overall. But the primary motivating factor, I believe, although I don't know if it's ever been confirmed, was to get content to build out Disney Plus. So right. That Disney Plus was like a fulsome offering because they had the family stuff. They had...
Well, it's like The Simpsons and all that is also included in that, right?
The Simpsons, Nat Geo, FX, all that. Things like Free Guy,
right?
X-Men, all of that IP can now go into Disney Plus because of that deal.
Ooh,
and Avatar.
Oh my God. So I didn't know. I thought, so Avatar wasn't Disney. Avatar was Fox.
Avatar was Fox. And so it's weird, right?
Oh
because
my God.
This deal happens closes in 2019. I guess it was announced in 2018. And then they have to scrap what they're doing in the theme parks because they got to build an Avatar ride, right? Because I think Fox controlled Avatar, but they were working with Disney on doing a theme park ride. So that may have predated the deal, but now Disney owns it all, so it's simpler.
Wow. I mean, when you think about it, like, I mean, the potential for Disney and the content that can be created right now, I mean, the Avatar thing is interesting because Avatar 2 is, you know, it's soon to be released. The trailer is going to be actually released on the Doctor Strange movie, which is like, and for some reason I was like, oh, Disney's releasing a Disney movie on Disney, another Disney movie. It didn't occur to me. I just was like, oh, I guess Avatar is a Disney movie. Which is interesting because I didn't realize that Disney didn't ever not own Avatar. But we don't need to get into Avatar right now. Let's continue with the whole, like, they got basically this insane package of content that included X-Men.
Right. So think about, like, the creative team at Marvel. They are meticulous. They're forward-thinking. They're planning out years in advance. I don't know that they thought that they were going to have the ability to use X-Men characters in their films, right? Because at that time, it was basically like, they're with Fox for forever, and we can't like build them into scripts. We can't creatively control them because we don't know that we'll have the right to do that. So it takes a couple years to integrate that in. So the deal closes in 2019. most of the films, you know, Black Widow, Eternals, and Shang-Chi, they were already sort of in development and in process when that deal closed. So it's not like you could just rework them to throw in X-Men characters. And it would have to fit within the sort of realm of the comics.
And the story of the movies and what they're trying to achieve as well.
Yeah, so it's not only the timing, but also like the arc of the characters within the comics, because it's grounded in the comics. So, you know, Doctor Strange and really what Spider-Man sort of was the launching pattern, you know, when you get into the multiverses, you allows you to sort of reboot things, right? Because Professor X died in Logan, and that's Fox control. And I remember being really sad. Like,
so did Wolverine.
Wolverine died. Yeah. And so I don't know. I think there's rumors that Wolverine might be back in this, but in the trailer, you can see, you can't see Charles. He sounds like Charles.
It's Charles. It's Patrick Stewart's voice.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that like the MCU has been setting this up with what Loki did, which was like the introduction of variants and the multiverse. And so it could be, well, yes, this character died in this movie, but this is a different variant from a different universe of that character. I guess we'll find out.
Right, exactly. So like creatively, and I'm not a creative executive. I would love to be, but I don't know how they decide, you know, which storylines from Fox X-Men movies to sort of keep, if they want to keep any of it, if they want to just start over from scratch. So I think it'll be really interesting from a fan perspective. But the idea that, you know, the characters that we grew up as sort of like the A-team of characters, like the X-Men basically coming back in, like Doctor Strange 2 is not a reboot of X-Men, but it's going to be the bridge, that sort of like the entryway for Charles Xavier and maybe others. And and that's what's so exciting from my perspective.
Well, I mean, it's amazing. Like, you know, both of us grew up around the same, we were probably around the same age when the X-Men, the animated series came out. Like that music is iconic. One of the best. I mean, I grew up in Pakistan, so I would come to the US and I would like, I couldn't wait to watch X-Men. And I still put it on from time to time on Disney Plus. And I know that they're, you know, we've talked about this before. They're bringing that back to Disney Plus.
Yeah.
They're bringing back that animated series that continues from where it left off. It's going to be interesting to see how the film versions go of X-Men, given the ending of the X-Men franchises recently, besides Logan, was just, I mean, my personal opinion, they're pretty terrible movies. They weren't great. Fans didn't have the best experience with them, or, you know, they weren't rated well. They probably did decently in the box office, but I think the premise of bringing back these characters that we loved, especially like with Patrick Stewart coming back. And then also, it's not only just the X-Men, there's rumors of the Fantastic Four being introduced in this, with Mr. Fantastic being part of the Illuminati. I'm trying not to watch too many of the new trailers because I want to go in there with like some surprise.
Short of Optimus Prime showing up, I mean, there's really like limitless potential now. And I think that's so cool. But the funny thing is, so I'm at Marvel. I leave right when Avengers 2 is coming out. Cap, Winter Soldier is in pre-production.
Ooh, dude, the best one too.
I actually like Winter Soldier more.
I thought I said Winter Soldier was the best one.
Civil War was in pre-production.
Oh, yeah, Soldier. Winter Soldier was the best one.
Yeah. And so I had no idea. If you told me what are the odds that the X-Men are going to end up back in the MCU, I would have said zero, right? Because
really?
why would Fox give up such an enormous property? Maybe I didn't know that there was a check that could be big enough, right?
Right.
And Marvel's of the view, like, they're not going to pay to get these characters back. That's something that Bob Iger had to do, because Marvel's like very frugal and they're like, no, we'll keep rolling without them, right?
Yeah,
mindset. But it makes sense from Disney's perspective. But it could have gone to Comcast. It very could have easily, like that basket of IP and those channels and networks, Comcast was actually a leading bidder. And so it really is kind of fortuitous for us as fans. And this just goes to show that these deals can have like huge implications.
Yeah. It's like huge cultural implications for like us as fans to be able to finally get the stuff that we deserve and what we want. I mean, if Comcast controlled X-Men, maybe they could have done something with it, but my bet would have been we would have just seen like, hey, let's just throw these movies out because we can make money out of them, versus the way Marvel and Kevin Feige have thought about things, that they really, really give a shit about the stories. They really, really give a shit about the longevity of these characters and how they fit with each other and the patience they've had. I mean, you've told me the planning that goes into I mean, Kevin Feige's looking at things like a decade out, I've got to imagine.
I heard stories. I don't remember exactly the details, but like I've heard, you know, people from who are in the inner circle say that he's got like 25 films planned out.
Really?
Right? Like, in like different flow charts and arcs and things, because he's got to think that far in advance. Yeah. And it's only because of his enormous success and like how cerebral he is about it that it's able to continue. But no studio is going to give someone, you know, a 25 picture budget, right? Like that's so that's why most people are thinking like, okay, hopefully I can get a sequel, or hopefully I can get a, if this movie's great, then I'll do a sequel and maybe there'd be a third movie. But like no studio is willing to sort of guarantee more than that. But Kevin has a lot of security now, but I think he always was thinking about the future. And it's interesting, you know, we're only speculating here as fans. I think if Comcast had bought the Fox properties, then you'd probably see some X-Men show on Peacock. But who knows?
Yeah, exactly. And would it be good? Who knows? I don't know. I mean, look, they've done some stuff that's well, but I think it's in the right hands. It's exciting. And, you know, I'm also excited not only to watch the movie, I am excited to watch that Avatar 2 trailer. I know we kind of talked about this before we started recording, but like, yes, it's been a long time. It's been a really long time. Like, is it too late? Did he wait too long to release this thing?
I think they waited too. So here's Avatar came out, what, 2009? And it's like highest grossing, at the time, highest grossing film of all time.
Yeah.
Was passed by Endgame. And, you know, James Cameron's like, he just hits home runs with.
Dude, boss.
Yeah. What, Aliens, Terminator, Titanic, and.
Titanic, yeah. True Lies.
Avatar.
I mean, True Lies. I mean, I watched Titanic. I was just on a flight. I rewatched it. That is a brilliant movie. And I was bawling on the plane. It's a brilliant movie.
And so he's very meticulous and takes a lot of time too. And I remember they started working on Avatar 2 while I was at Marvel. This is when Marvel was back in Manhattan Beach before they even moved to the Disney lot. They were sharing space with us and they eventually took over the whole studio. But I remember one day there was an elephant on set and we were like, why? Why is there an elephant here in Manhattan Beach? And it was like, oh, James Cameron's testing something for Avatar 2. So that, think of how long this thing's been in development.
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of crazy because it's not just Avatar 2. They've got plans for Avatar 3, 4,
and 5.
And it's, here's what I'll say. I think it's kind of cool that now Disney owns Avatar. They're using the platform for Multitude of Madness to preview the exclusive trailer for it.
It's, Multiverse of Madness.
Sorry, I keep saying Multitude?
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing. But yes, it is. It's a multiverse.
Here I'm like claiming to be this big fan. I don't even know the fucking name of the movie.
It is a Multitude of Madness, but it's Multiverse of Madness.
Multiverse of Madness. CinemaCon just had the Avatar 2 trailer come out, and the fans apparently were astonished. They were blown away by the effects and something. And that says something. The ability, like, I remember when I watched IMAX 3D, I was blown away by the effects. The movie was okay, but, like, it was a fun movie because it was so, like, whoa, this is visually amazing. Since then, we haven't really had anything like that. And can he surprise us again? Look, man, I wouldn't put it past James Cameron. So we'll have to see.
I mean, what's going to surprise us? Like, literally being in a metaverse and living through Avatar 2? I just don't know. But
No, I know what will surprise us. Optimus Prime showing up.
Optimus Prime alongside Professor Xavier. Or maybe Professor Xavier driving Optimus Prime would be... You know, because Optimus Prime basically drives himself.
Oh my God, that would be the only thing. James Cameron couldn't shock us, but that would be the best thing ever. But regardless, I think it's exciting. I can't wait to watch the movie. I'm sure you can't wait to watch it either. And then we get to talk about, okay, who are the characters? When we finally see the movie, we'll see who the characters are, what it sets it up for. And I'm sure we'll have more conversations around that.
Yeah, and I'd say that the legal takeaway here is we may not have dealt with it directly, but these license agreements, and especially when they're exclusive, you really have to be very specific about what's included, what isn't included in terms of the characters, the grant of rights, the term, the territory. You have to be as clear as day about that, because if it ends up being the most valuable property in all of Hollywood, then people are going to, you know, there's going to be lawsuits, or, you know, it's going to cost you a lot of money to fix the problem, right? So $50 billion in the grand scheme of things is probably worth it, but who knows? It's crazy to me that all of Marvel, Disney bought all of Marvel for like $4 billion in 2010. And then Like, what would they pay? What would someone pay for Marvel now?
Oh my God, man. I can't even imagine what that's worth.
Crazy. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. But it's like, wow. I mean, just the, again, I mean, what Disney's been able to do with content, you got to give it to them. It's been pretty incredible. And like, let's see what, well, who knows? Now the possibilities of rides at Disney parks are just endless.
Build more parks. You know, we need a Marvel. I think Marvel needs its own park. But we'll see. That's another episode for that's a story for another episode for sure.
Well, look, man, thanks for giving us the history lesson here and excited to watch the movie. That's our show for this week, folks. Make sure that you're subscribed to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, wherever you choose to listen. Hit me up on Twitter at @MeshLakhani or feel free to contact us on bcp@sayhilola.com. This episode is edited and produced by Valentino Rivera, Marco Seiler Gonzalez, with assistant producer Justin Sanchez and assistant research producer Haas Nasser. Until next time.
Thanks, everyone.